times here. All right, we are live now.
Yeah.
Welcome, Bitcoin veterans. We are back in the studio after
back in early.
Man, it's almost been 3 weeks. Yeah, we are.
Feels like 3 months.
Yeah, I know. The time cycle, not being able to talk to your boys, you know, doing this kind of stuff once a week, it's a lot. And you know, everything that's going on in the world right now is just crazy. We've already been chatting for about 45 minutes behind the scenes, just kind of catching up on personal stuff. Yeah. And you know, that's kind of how Mike and I are. We'll talk off screen a lot, and then we'll get on and we'll talk as early as we can and bring everybody in. We've got Colonel Tim Kirk coming in later, but we decided, because you know, we haven't done this in a couple weeks, that we'd get on a little bit early.
We're already talking about stuff that we want to talk about on the pod, and we're just like, you know what, we're just gonna go live. Like, fuck it, we'll do it live. Like, why are we gonna wait and suck all the energy out of the conversation?
Yeah, some blows into the other. Forgive us while we share links to the show. You can actually go do the same if you got groups and everything out there, and you're on X especially, because the old YouTube doesn't give us any sort of highlight. Go out there and share it on X, share it with your friends and your groups and all that fun stuff. We're going to do the same. We're going to bring Colonel Tim Kirk in later. Tim is, I think, one of the really good guys in the space. One of the few colonels out there that will say what needs to be said and all that fun stuff. So he's slated here for...
His CV scared the shit out of me, I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh! I like talking to this guy, but I didn't realize he was this much of a badass. I was like, yeesh.
Yeah, he's been around and done some things.
Yeah.
Air Force Colonel, A-10 pilot, and he's been around and done some things. So he's also a really good guy. He's got a charity out there that I'm sure we'll get into and discuss a little bit. But yeah, it'll be fun. We're gonna talk some current events here in a second. Let me grab the link as it's going on now, and we'll share it around a little bit, and from there we'll go. Let's see, let me grab the there we go.
Doesn't like the double echo.
I know, right? Listening to yourself talk on your own talk show that's going on right now, that's a lot.
Yeah, you know, just to get some of the viewers up to speed while we're doing all this, one of the kind of primary topic that cause us to just say screw it and kick this thing off early is for those of you that are reading my Substack, I appreciate you guys for doing that. I've gone down a kind of rabbit hole of I want to get a lot of secret military operations that are documented but not well known, kind of building a dossier on my Substack so that later I can go through and talk about them. Because some of the biggest stuff that's actually very prescient to right now, and specifically like the last almost 10 years, and particularly around the last 10 years of American politics and presidential elections, is I've come across this group called the Blue Network, which is run by Israeli intelligence, and they have been doing active counterintelligence operations illegally on the U.S. soil, where they have been creating public dossiers of American students and staff and faculty at universities, and specifically professors. And they've been marking these individuals for targeting and manipulation to get them to stop talking negatively about Israel and specifically the IDF and Mossad's activities. And this stuff's particularly important because they've also documented, using a group called Psy Group, where they've just documented that they're going to create fake Facebook profiles and use bot networks in order to create. I haven't published this yet on Psy Group, but be prepared, because I think I actually have it. So there's a quote in here from this book. Psy Group's motto was to shape reality. Psy Group billed itself as specializing in innovative influence and intelligence activities tailored to a client's unique needs. So they literally created fake social media accounts with bot networks and used the network itself and these accounts to create false versions of reality to get people to buy into and believe. Like, that's fucking insane.
They're
like,
evil, man. There's evil going on right now.
The unfortunate part is that it's not insane because, like, it is insane because of the fact that they documented it and that, like, that was their actual stated belief or their intention. But, like, this goes well beyond, like, the technical speculation that we've all been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we speculated. We were like, we knew that this stuff was happening, but we didn't
know. Now it's just out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a subject I think bears us talking about for a bunch of different aspects, right? Like, one of the things that I think is really, really interesting about this in terms of the psychology is what's happening in the United States right now in terms of the attacks on free speech because of the influence that Israel has in American politics. Yeah. And, feel how you want to feel about any of this. I don't care. The First Amendment was put first, obviously, because, they thought, hey, if cooler heads prevail, we won't destroy each other through violence and force and coercion, right? Like, that's what they want.
Logic and reason will reign supreme.
Exactly right. So now, we've got these calls, and literally, now we have video recording of plainclothes officers stopping, students with, visas, some with green cards, and abducting them, right? Like, taking them and basically we're gonna ship them back to their country, right? Like, yeah. these are people who are extremely active and speaking out against Israel. The thing is if there was any other crime being committed, and I mean, like, really a crime, some physical violence, some party has been wrongly some party has been wronged. I mean that as in not just your feelings are hurt and people are saying things about you, whether they're true or untrue, right? Like, there's, if there is property damage, if somebody's been hurt, if somebody has, been raped or worse, right? Like, those are crimes. That is, we don't need distinction for crime. There's no crime that's committed with some, love in somebody's heart. This idea of hate crime, I think, is just the most ridiculous thing on earth. And so this is the toe in the door, and this is what I can't stand. You've got all these people who are on Trump's side, and I don't want to MAGA's credit, a lot of people from MAGA have dropped off the Trump bus, right? Like, they're not on the Trump bus anymore. There is a mass awakening happening. I'm not saying it's big enough yet, but it's getting bigger and bigger by the day. But this piece where they are singling out college students for speaking out, I think this is kind of the, oh, well, we're going to take the crazy guys' guns first. Like, it's just the crazy guys. It's just the inmates. It's just, these guys who have been convicted of crimes in the past, right? Like, this is the slippery slope that they'll use to pry the door open and then finally kick it in. Mm-hmm. This guy, Randy Fine, who just got reported that he has won his seat down in Florida again, came out this week. I should play this video. Let me pull it up real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
But
this is the world that I am not involved in. So this is all new information for me.
Yeah, let me share this.
Is he smoking a Cuban in that picture? That looks like a fat blunt. I'm not gonna lie.
It does. That's why I chose it. I was like, man, this is actually a really cool picture. You guys can see it in a little bit. But this is Randy Fine talking about 5-year prison sentences for distributing quote unquote hate
and anti-Israel flyers. Are you freaking kidding me?
Dude, check this out.
Holding people accountable without violating their free speech. Sure. And again, I would remind you that there's no First Amendment right to conduct. There's a First Amendment right to speech. And the things that we're targeting in the bill are not speech. Again, if someone wants to stand across the street from my house and wave a sign on the sidewalk, they have every right to do that. And this bill won't have anything to do with that. But when it veers into conduct, and so the way we're going to approach this is through a hate crime kicker. So if you graffiti a building, it is a crime now. But if your motivation is hate, it will be a third degree felony. You'll spend 5 years in prison. If you want to litter, it's a crime right now. But if you litter and if your motivation is a hate crime, it will be a third degree felony. You will spend 5 years in jail. It is a crime right now to hang banners.
Uh-oh.
For obvious reasons, we don't want to distract drivers. But if you do that and you have a hate crime, a hate motivation, it will be a third degree felony. You will spend 5 years in jail.
How optimistic are you?
5 years?
I guarantee the bill will pass.
Dude, that's crazy, man. This guy just won his seat. And the Republicans, this is what I can't stand. You know, the Republicans are now doing the same thing that the people on the other side of the aisle and even the right side of the aisle, right? It's the same thing. It's like every time this thing rolls around, it's the MO is so tired. It's we're going to use this kicker is what he says, hate speech. This did not exist, right? Like, you know, Jackson and I should say Jefferson and George Washington and Franklin and the rest of the founders, they were into hate speech. You know, they did not like the British, right? This country hated the fact that they were paying a 2% tax on tea, for God's sakes. They hated it to the point where they crossed a river in the middle of the night on Christmas and shot these guys in the face. And we're supposed to believe that, you know, there is some exception now because of this fat fuck. who down in Florida, who is obviously compromised. And I imagine, you know, he's a little good goy that's been out there probably touching kids or is on film doing something he shouldn't have done. And now he's got to pull all the water for these guys to say that this now, you know, if it's littering, but you know, hey, by the way, it's littering and you got hate in your heart because, you know,
littering and
5 years in jail for littering, 5 years in jail for, you know, possibly, you know, for graffiti. Like, what if they catch a kid who, you know, doesn't know anything? Okay, that's a hate crime, kid, you know, let me do you one better. We have had instances with proof where Jews are literally going around painting swastikas with spray paint on buildings to incite more attention to quote unquote anti-Semitism. And so are we going to give those guys 5 years as well?
It's basically a black flag op.
Exactly right, man. This, you know, when you look at these false flags that have gotten us into situation after situation, when we spent 20 years in the Middle East because of false flags.
Yep. I've got a quote from that little research book too, that it's actually related to this. Okay. So this is a quote from the book, and there's also going to be a quote inside it. So just be prepared. So the key was turning thousands of Americans into clandestine Israel agents to spy on and carry out the operations against their fellow citizens. Quote, we are a different government working on foreign soil, and we have to be very, very cautious, she said. She that they are referring to was her last name was Vaknin Gill. So I have no idea. I have to double back and like actually confirm who that actually was, because like I'm hopping between all sorts of different chapters and everything for all this research. I'm sorry. The Israeli American Council General Vaknin Gill. That's Vaknin hyphen Gill, G-I-L. She also said, in order to win, we must use tricks and craftiness. So like they're literally turning the American people. And they're relying on the Americans that are American, Jewish, their ties to Israel. This is why I want to document all this stuff, because this is also what China is doing. because China, like, so Israel and China are both using their home mainland ties to turn their people that are inside the U.S. into their own spies so that they can bring that information back to Israel or whatever. It's actually, I mean, it's pretty intelligent. Like, I can't say that we wouldn't do it either, just because that's how, like, combat works. But, like, this, like, people need to understand that this stuff is real and it is pun intended.
I like what you did there.
Yeah. But people need to understand that this stuff's real. It's not just like a couple of, like, a bunch of paranoid veterans are talking about stuff that that normal people only get exposure to in Hollywood. It's like, it's in Hollywood because it's real. And by the way, my research is going to take me, like the first, on an earlier part of the book actually details significant ties from Israel of manipulating Hollywood, like actors like Robert De Niro and films man. Like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Hollywood is full of these guys. I think in order for your star to rise, so to speak, like you have to be on the, you have to be this. And that's the thing.
You have to toe the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically it's like, look, we have you in a compromised position, you know, at some party, at some place, on some film set, wherever it was, we have you doing something that you're not proud of. But here's the thing is, all you have to do is do this for the rest of your life. We will make you wealthy. We will make you rich. We will make you powerful. And if you do these things, you have nothing to worry about. Why? Because we control everything. We control all of the studios. We control all of the news media. We control all the politicians. We control the courts. We control, you know, the vast amount of print and the vast amount of, you know, the mainstream that's out there. We control the banks and the money, and we'll make sure that everything that you need is covered up.
Yeah. And like, and people also need to know, it's like when you and I say they control all these aspects, it's speaking a little bit in hyperbole, because like when we're talking about intelligence operations don't get their objectives accomplished necessarily by controlling everything. They maintain control over specific leverage points so that they get minimum effective dose. So they get the most out of the least amount of effort and resources that they need in order to get what they need done.
Right. And then there's obviously the chilling effect where, you know, if you don't play by our rules, then, you know, you may have an accident. And
yeah,
when people have accidents in those circles, people notice. It's like, dude, did you see what they did to so-and-so? Do you see what they did to, I don't know, Paul Walker? Did you see what they did to...
What was the recent actor? Him and his wife and his dog were all found dead in the house together.
It was the guy that did...
Gene Hackman?
It was Gene Hackman, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, who actually did a conspiracy theory movie with Will Smith back in the day. What was that called?
Enemy of the State.
Enemy of the State.
He has a number of them, because he has Enemy of the State and he has Behind Enemy Lines.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is like, here, it's getting to the point where it's so bold, and I'm gonna bring this one up as well. This happened earlier, or maybe even later last week. It may have been just earlier this week, March 30th. That was Sunday. It was printed. Let me back this thing up and just give you the rabbi in his own words here.
Anti-Semitism is not just an age-old prejudice. It is a contemporary crisis manifesting on campuses across the nation.
All right. I just have to pause this. It's a crisis, right? It's a crisis for who? It's not a crisis for me and you. It's not a crisis for, you know, the people of even, you know, a shade of, you know, brown in their pigment. It's not a shade for people of Asia. This is not a problem for most of Europe, for God's sakes. This is a problem for about 2% of the American population, about 0.2% of the world population. A crisis for these guys. And it's...
Let's also state like a fact here as well. That's also in the research that I intend to include. They're using anti-Semitism as a bulwark to protect themselves.
Sure, of course.
Because like, it's like you and I, like I don't care if you're Jewish. Like, you could practice your faith all you want.
Yep.
It's the activities that Israel is doing, and they are hiding behind the ostracization of anti-Semitism. It's like in high school, the bully that keeps like poking and prodding everybody, but then once somebody decides to react and like push back, they're like, whoa, man, like, what are you doing? Like, you don't need to be doing that. That's like, you don't need to be saying all this anti-Semitic stuff.
It's right.
Like, well, no. You don't get to do all this shit and mess around with all this stuff. And then you're going to hide behind your faith as a shield. Like, no, you're a piece of shit. We're going to hunt you down.
Well, and notice how this is their name for everybody else. Just like they have the Goy and Goyim. Right. Like when you look at when you look into the Talmud and you understand what Goy and Goyim is, that, like, you're animals, you're subhuman. You're not on the level. Everybody's equal, but there are some people who are more equal. Right. And that's how they refer to everybody. So now all the Goyim who are noticing what's going on, it's anti-Semitic to bring up facts. It's anti-Semitic to talk about the USS Liberty. It's anti-Semitic to talk about how much and what kind of preposterous odds that they occupy such high level positions throughout everything, like in terms of monopolies, right? So if that is their name for us, it's not like we're, you know, people are going around. When's the last time you called somebody a kike, Mike?
Never.
Never.
I don't think I've ever called anybody that.
Like, derogatory slurs. Like, I will call Irish mix all the time because they're in my family. And Krauts because I'm German, right? It's like,
or Polish Polacks.
Yeah, right. Like, but the thing is none of us care. None of us care. The thing is nobody's calling these guys names. Nobody's being anti-Semitic. Not that they're even Semitic, for God's sakes. But let this rabbi finish here, because what he says will clarify, because they speak in blurred language.
Homie behind him looks like
it is not enough for individuals or institutions to merely claim they are not anti-Semitic. As my father once taught me, it is not enough for people, especially public figures, to be neutral or not be anti-Semitic. One must be anti-Semitic.
Get the fuck out of here.
Which means you must be pro-Jew and pro-Israel. You can't,
above all else.
You can't not be, is what he's saying. You can't not be pro-Israel and pro-Jew. Yeah. That is the wildest thing and the most arrogant thing somebody could say. It's like, man, maybe I've got my own thing going on. Maybe I don't subscribe to what you guys do. Maybe
imagine if the Pope said that.
You have to be
anti-Christian or anti-Catholic.
Right. You have to be pro-Catholic.
Yeah. Like nobody in the world would take that as a good thing.
No.
But Israel gets away with it. Just because they're Jewish.
So let's hear what he has to continue saying. But like the fact that he's going before Congress and saying that you public figures, I'm giving you a message right now as people who are very powerful in the black hats, who whisper in very powerful people's ears. Let me tell you, on a national stage, he could tell all of these people these things, and I'm sure they have been telling them these things behind closed doors. Now they're coming out and saying it before Congress, and I guarantee you they want the stage to say this.
We must demand the same of our universities and government institutions. This hearing, in my opinion, is an attempt to be just that, anti-Semitic.
Pro-Israel.
He specifically said the university thing because of the operations I just talked about, like Canary Mission, like through Psy Group, because they're targeting the universities and they're using that as the example. It's like, we've been effectively doing this in the universities. We need the government to mirror our effect.
That's
like,
right.
No talking bad about Israelis' activities. And like the other thing too is like, dude, this is like one of my favorite books ever as far as research goes, because it also documents like Benjamin Netanyahu's rise. That dude is one of the most corrupt individuals. I mean, I've also not done a whole lot of research into politicians in general, but this dude's like CV, there's not a single aspect of his resume and his rise to power that is legitimate, that was done without corrupt corrupt activities and manipulation and blackmail and everything else.
I think that's most of these people. I think most of these people are so compromised, and that's why they're in the positions they're in, because
And that includes our people too.
Yeah. 100 Absolutely. The reason the Epstein files haven't come out yet is because they don't go after people who are on the Epstein files, right? Like that is now, you know, it's been 3 months in already. And between Pam Bondi and Cash Patel, we have zero arrests from the Epstein list. Meanwhile, they're going after what local law enforcement can do in terms of the Tesla dealerships and all that. Like that's their claim to fame. And maybe we'll get into this later with the Colonel a little bit, but the amount of propaganda that's coming out of this administration on X, whether it's Pete Hegseth, whether it is Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, DNI.
Talking about Gabbard? Gabbard. Okay.
Tulsi Gabbard. You know, these
Gabby is close.
Yeah, her and then Kristi Noem. Like those people are highlighted. They have professional makeup artists, they have professional film crews. They're out there doing these things to, I think, gin up the law enforcement base, right? It's like, dude, what did they campaign on? They're like, hey, we're going to close down a bunch of these bureaus and agencies and all that. Now, you know, Cash is out there saying these are the finest people in the world at the FBI, Tulsi's doing the same thing with, the intelligence networks that she has. Kristi Noem's doing it with, Homeland Security, which is trash, by the way, minus Border Patrol, which looks like it's actually doing its job again.
Besides, the Texas Border Patrol.
Yeah. And I think that's more or less the guy that's, in charge of the CBP. And that's
Homan.
Yeah. Homan.
Yeah. That guy's somebody that I would not want to have, I would not want to be in his sights at all.
No, he actually thinks he looks like he means business. And, he's that bull, right? He's got, one target and one mission, and there's nobody that's going to get in that guy's way. But everything else, man, it just looks like such a psyop. And, what that means to me is, look out, American people, because if these guys are ginning up, and trying to repair the image and the trust of these institutions with the badges and the guns, then what that means is they're about to try to use them. And to me, that is one of the biggest red flags, and possibly, what you said earlier, black flags, the false flags that we're looking at, man.
That's actually a really good point. Cause I hadn't really stopped to think about that, but I agree. They are trying to make it seem like we're almost in April. Mm-hmm. We're now in April. So the first 90 days, we're supposed to believe that in the first 90 days, they've completely rebuilt these departments and they're good now.
Yeah, they're fine. Don't worry about it.
you guys have rooted out all this stuff. And then they've also been very publicly embarrassed of trying to say that they got the Epstein files. Or the JFK files.
They're on our desk. They're going to come out in phases. Hey, look, we gave them some trapper keepers.
Yeah, no.
What?
Oh, well, we Pam Bondi's office, saying that they were shocked that they didn't get all of the intel. It's like, really? You guys are trying to tell me that you've dealt with criminal activity, that you are, and Cash Patel has gone on the Sean Ryan podcast talking about how he understands intel. You guys thought that a network that we all speculate we know is corrupt all the way through the judicial and executive branches, you thought that they were just going to fork over everything? What's up, Humble? You thought that they were actually going to fork over everything and give everything that we want just because you guys demanded it or asked?
Right.
I guarantee that there are terabytes of files and evidence that have just been permanently destroyed that we will never find.
Yeah, you just dump it. That's the thing is as soon as you get it, you dump it into the public so that the public can do what the public does and open source, decode, and go through everything that is out there. And when you've got 330 million people plus the world watching things like JFK, this is what you do. You dump it all out there and people will do the rest. And that's good enough for all of us, right? I trust I trust the America. Well, I trust people in general to go out there and just comb through this. Some people are going to make mistakes, but there are a lot of other people that are going to go, hey guys, I think we got something here. And when they have something, it's like what we've always said is, you know, information, good information wants to travel and it wants to travel fast. And, you know, it's just like an idea. That type of information is going to make its way to the top. It's going to get shared, especially on X and, you know, places out there that are decentralized, like Nostr. That, like, this is where, you know, this is where all this stuff really happens. And the idea that, oh yeah, we've got committees, we've got teams, and we've got Anna Paula Luna, who is apparently in charge of something, but not really anything. And, you know, like,
she doesn't understand shit, dude. Like, I've heard her talk. It's like, yeah, it's all LARP.
It's all, yeah, exactly. It's all LARP. These people, you know, they can't run away from what it is. And, you know, where I was getting to, I think, is we're just kind of that point right now where I think more and more and more people are just seeing through, like, man, both of them. It's Democrats, it's Republicans. I'm out of MAGA. I'm not doing this shit anymore. We shouldn't be sending our boys to die overseas. You know, we've got, you know, Trump, who's threatening Iran, for God's sakes. Like, they've been toting this idea that, you know, Iran's going to have, you know, a nuclear bomb since the 70s. And they use that MO over and over and over again. They used it when I was, you know, a fresh 20 something year old in the Marine Corps, and like, oh, you know, like, they might be next, right? Like, we can't let those guys get the bomb. Yeah. But yeah, no, man, like, what are you talking about? Like, what, why has the U.S. got any interest in Iran at all? Iran doesn't want to attack America. Iran wants nothing to do with us.
If they do have any desire to attack America, it's because we're fucking around in their backyard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Operation Ajax in 1949, when we removed Mossadegh, the first CIA action was to remove Mossadegh, for God's sakes, which was a democratically elected guy. He wasn't a great guy, but most heads of state aren't. Like, I'll give them that, right? Yeah. I don't think Mossadegh had pulled off international outrage in terms of killing tons and tons of his neighbor's civilians, population, bombing hospitals and civilian camps and all that kind of stuff. I don't think he ever did that. I don't think he ever invaded any other countries, for God's sakes. And the CIA ousted him. And ever since the Middle East, and especially Iran, has been, you know, in turmoil. And a lot of that's induced by what we're doing at the behest of the Israelis, because that is their biggest threat. And if you look at it through that lens, everything that the American forces have done on their own without Israelis ever showing up to the fight to fight their enemies in their backyard becomes clear as day. Is they don't want to sacrifice themselves. They don't want to go out and fight, you know, quote unquote, their enemies. They want the American juggernaut to do it. And it reminds me for the world of the movie Dune, like 100%. You've got the emperor and the emperor's people, who, you know, let's just call them Israel. And then you've got the Sardaukar, which are the which are the Americans, right? The Americans are the blade of Israel, and they have gone in and wrecked the Middle East, which is a desert, the dunes for the spice, because everything operates off of oil. Right. And that
oil resource, and opium.
Right, man. And we've surrounded a crucial city, you know, or I should say a crucial country over there, you know, that has a ton of oil. It's got a population, I think, of somewhere around 90 million people, for God's sakes. And, man, I tell you what, that's not a country you want to mess with. That's a long, disastrous war, and there aren't going to be any winners in that. It's just going to be attrition, and decides, you know, basically who's left.
Yeah. And I talked with a mutual friend of ours, I think a week or two ago, that I think that there's a possibility.
Magnetic pole shift 2028.
Well, you know that magnetic pole shift is going to happen right at the climax of all this chaos. So it'll just, like, it'll be insane. But
right. One
thing that I've been weighing is a couple things I've been weighing with this move of getting the JFK files and talking about Epstein in a very public manner. Because both of the interesting thing is, like, if you dig into the JFK files enough, for those that haven't, you start to find, again, Israeli influence on getting JFK knocked out. And then there's obviously an Israeli influence in the Epstein files. I'm wondering, I'm hoping that there is a strategy from the Trump admin of starting with the JFK files, and then whatever limited release we have of the Epstein files. Because I think that they're gonna have to give the public something to nibble on. It's not going away. Yeah, it's not going away, and like they're gonna have to satiate the public somehow. And they'll do it with redactions or whatever they have to in order to get the public to stop bitching and moaning so that they can go on controlling the people in another way. But I'm hoping there's a strategy here of kind of doing the JFK dump to let the public, like you were saying, they're going to do what they do. Like people are going to dig through, and like the general public is going to eat away at those files like a pack of piranhas. And I'm hoping that Trump did it as kind of a threat in order to, like, they release the JFK files, go back to Israel. It's like, hey, you guys need to like start talking differently with us in a public manner, because our people are going to start finding out that you guys have been fucking with us in very meaningful ways.
That's the thing, is they know, like they know that we know.
But there's a difference between knowing with speculation and knowing with sources, right? Of being able to go to these JFK files and be like, no, this isn't a conspiracy theory, like just right. in the Fugazi and in the ether. Like we have the documentation. We know that you guys have been doing this, cold hard facts. Like we know it's been happening. You guys need to start talking differently with us. You need to stop demanding that we go to war for you. And then they'll use that as some political thing. We'll keep going to war for them or whatever. But I'm hoping that eventually it leads to this is my own theory. I think that Russia and the US are going to team up at some point in the future. And I'm hoping that Israel is part of the reason that they team up. Because Russia doesn't like Israel.
No.
Or China's not going to like Israel.
They act like they don't like them. I don't think China has any love for them at all. China has been very outspoken against what's going on in Israel and Palestine. Like they're like, hey, this has got to stop. Like there's at some point, guys, like this, enough is enough. This has got to stop. We're not doing this shit anymore.
They've got their own hypocrisy with the Uyghurs and everything else. But I'm hoping that, because like, this is like the 5D chess that I'm trying to figure out, that I'm really hoping ends up being the crux, is that Israel is pushing war with Iran and Yemen right now. Right. And I don't like that at all. I think we wanted to talk about some of that. I don't understand the Yemen stuff like much at all. And just like with Syria, it's super complex and it's like a wild kind of thing to try and dig into. But I think what we're going to start seeing here is that the EU is towing the line. Like they're going with the hate speech and the programming and all this other, and like the Israeli operations that have been getting pushed on the US. And we're kind of like, no, we understand this game. We're not going along. Like at least the people aren't going along with it. Mm-hmm. The EU seems to be much more beholden to that kind of programming and those psychological operations. The EU also doesn't produce their own shit. Like the only thing the EU actually exports to the US, like the majority of their exports, is pharmaceuticals. Now, when you dig into the pharmaceutical stuff and you look at like the MAHA movement with RFK Jr. and the stuff that's come out with RFK, he's clearly being blackmailed by Israel. And he's pushing the US distancing itself from Big Pharma, like particularly cutting out allowing Big Pharma to advertise in the US. And the majority of the EU's exports are pharmaceuticals. And those pharmaceuticals are coming from companies that were, their claim to fame was their rise through power through the Nazi empire, like Merck. I can't think of the other big names right now, but Merck is one of them, where their first big products were cocaine and heroin. And those are drugs that come out of the Middle East, right? Well, not necessarily cocaine. Cocaine's more like South America, but heroin comes out of the Middle East.
Sure.
And I think that there's a push where we're coming to an inflection point of extreme vulnerability to where the EU is going to get a major source of funding cut off from the US Yeah, Bayer. Thank you, Tora. Yes. Bayer's a big one. The EU is going to get a major source of funding cut off from them. And they're also getting a major source of funding cut off from our Federal Reserve because Jerome Powell, since June 2021, has told Christine Lagarde to go pound sand that we're not going to print money just to support the EU because they don't know how to do economics and they don't know how to export or they don't know how to produce anything outside of like Germany, right? And I think that we're going to see that the EU is pushing for maintaining this war, even though a major two major sources of funding are going to get cut off from them. They don't have any resources. Like, they don't have oil. They don't have uranium. They don't have rare earths. Like, they're literally, they've been benefiting and profiting off the rest of the world producing shit. And then they export. Yeah, they export politics and manipulation and everything else.
Yeah.
And virtue signaling. I think the EU is going to fall on their own sword with trying to maintain this war against Ukraine while also falling prey to the immigration strategy, because they have their own immigration problem like we do. But theirs is way worse because they don't have the Second Amendment, they don't have the First Amendment. Like, the people are getting like really riled up. And I think that we're gonna see the implosion of the EU. And I think that implosion might actually bring to light a lot of Israel's stuff, like a lot of airing out of laundry. Because people are going to dig into like why exactly this happened, just like with the JFK files. And I'm hoping that that happens, that the EU does implode. And then we start to like, people are like, well, why did this happen? Well, it's Israeli influence. And then I'm hoping that the US and Russia team up because we're both resource heavy superpowers. We're both primarily Christian Catholic countries. So we have a lot aligned together. We both worked together during the Revolutionary War. Yep. Russia helped us out. Like, a lot of people don't know that or forget about it. Russia's helped us out a lot, but we've still made them the demon, mostly because of the Soviet Union really ruined a lot of that. And then I think that there's a possibility we team up because we're both resource heavy. We both can command a significant portion of the world's oil and gold reserves. Because Russia doesn't get along with China. And we're going to want to make sure that Russia and China don't get along, because then that would be a unification of the entire Asian continent. And we can't have that. Yeah. Right. So, like, I think it's kind of like a long rant, but I think this is like, that's kind of like the 5D chess that we're going to start watching play out over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And I'm hoping Israel is the linchpin, like the linchpin that needs to be removed.
Well, and it could even be Iran, right? Like, because of Israel, with what, you know, with what Trump is saying, right? Like, you know, he's come out and said that they can't, like, Iran can't have the bomb, and Russia has signed a agreement, like a safety agreement with Iran, right? Like, that's a really
as long as it's a as long as they're wrongly attacked, Russia will defend.
Right. Right. And so now you've got the, you know, the supreme leader over there, and I'll bring this up because I think it's worth, you know, people seeing, is like, this is Khomeini. There we go. The supreme leader has reacted to Trump's threats. This is from the Iran Observer. An attack from the outside is unlikely, but if they make a mistake, they will certainly suffer a heavy blow. Apparently, they've moved about 5,000 missiles into a ready order. And, you know, we've got quote unquote assets all over there. Bahrain, we got places still in Iraq.
We have six B-2 bombers stationed at Diego Garcia right now.
That's right. And
those aren't small payloads, man.
Well, and I think it's almost a quarter of the B-2 bombers that we actually have in our U.S. military arsenal, man. So, like, that is a wild thing, you know. Like, the fact that this is getting to the point where it's getting, man, that is tough. It is really, really tough. And I don't know, you know, you kind of hope for behind the scenes that, you know, Putin and Trump have made this wild deal, right? Like, all this posturing, like, I don't know, call me the greatest optimist of all time. But if I was literally on a mission right now and all this was coming to a head and I needed to make sure that my people and my country all survived what was possibly about to happen, you know, it seems like, you know, the money changers, and let's bring this, all this back to Bitcoin. The money changers are desperate right now. Fiat is failing around the world. And
at the same time, for the first time in history.
Right. When you have a global economy that's based on a fiat currency that has unlimited printing power, that can do just disastrous things around the world at their will and cover it up and nobody ever pays for it, you've got a real problem when that same disastrous banking cabal begins to fail and begins to crumble. And that's what's really crumbling. I know the American empire is crumbling, but what's really crumbling is the international banking cabal, which is largely run by the same people that run BlackRock, which owns every damn, you know, I should say, owns the controlling share of most every big company and corporation.
I'm proud of you for that distinction, because people say like they own everything. It's like
they own everything.
They don't own it. They have a meaningful stake in almost every company.
They're the people who can raise the fund. So if you have a collapsing banking cabal, and what they need to do is take the notice off of them, what they're doing right now is perfect. They are literally pitting the world against each other like they have always done, where millions and millions of people, especially young men, young Christian white dudes, are going to pay. And I'm not just singling them out, but I'm going to tell you, throughout history, if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution, if you look at World War II, if you look at the American Revolution, if you look at all these things that we've done in terms of fighting wars, that is overwhelmingly the greatest share of all those deaths. That's who's dying. It's not. Yeah. And not in any, like, oh, you know, 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. No.
It's particularly principled young white men, too.
It is. It is guys who are like, not on my watch, not my property, not my family. This is not going to happen. We're going to get together and we're going to fight back. That's why Bitcoin is so important. And that's why I think we do what we do, and we understand what this asset is. This asset stops this in the future. Not totally. But on the scale that has been able to happen over the past millennia, at minimum, this heavily curtails that. And for me to be a part of this mission, to where we are taking the orange coin and delivering it to people and helping people understand like what this is and how it works and how we get better at doing this and securing the future so that this kind of stuff can never happen again, like, we are up against the wall right now, man. Boy, I'll tell you what, that's a war that breaks out only benefits those people at the very, very top who know where those wars are going to be, how to avoid them, and how to protect their assets. And that's why you're seeing such, like, right now, you're seeing a surge in gold. Like, I think you put up something, maybe even a good transition into this right here. Oh, where is it? Man, I had it up earlier.
Because what you're getting at is, like, while they're doing all this, is the major superpowers of the world are trying to bring they're reshoring all of their gold reserves so that we can figure out the next world order.
That's it.
Economic world order specifically, right? Yeah. Because the economic world order will be able to command the military world order. And like, people need to be patently aware of that.
Yeah.
Because the unfortunate thing is they're going to do it. Whoever's going to have the most reserves of these resources is going to be the one that has the influencing power over. We all know the central bank digital currencies are coming. Trump can say that, like, Trump's tried to say that, and the Federal Reserve's trying to say that they're not going to be behind it, but they are. Like, they're going to be behind a central bank digital currency, because every country is going to see the power of it. There's going to be no way that they're going to like not engage in it. It's going to be a very cleverly worded, strategized, built system. And I tend to think Tom Luongo is correct. I think that we're going to build a central bank digital currency that's going to mirror China's economic policy or economic system of having an internal dollar for within the states of the United States. Then we're going to have an external dollar for the rest of the world for international trade.
Oh, just like China.
And I'm betting the basis for that external international dollar is going to be Tether.
Oh, they're trying like crazy to do it, man. They're spending billions and billions of dollars that they've created out of thin air to do it.
Yeah. And I saw that part of my notifications for the day when I woke up was Circle applied for an IPO. So they're trying to get investors and debt so that they can fund their USDC central bank digital currency stablecoin.
Don't fall for it, people. It's Mount Stupid on steroids. Like, you're going to climb it, and it is going to be a rough fall because it's not going to last. If you don't understand this, there's some great books out there that you can start to go understand. And I'm going to plug my buddy, Safedean Amousse. Safedean is one of the greatest voices out there in the Bitcoin space on Israel right now. And for that, on top of the fact that he's written a couple of really amazing books, and I mean a couple, like the guy's fairly prolific. He's a doctor of economics, and he's incredible. If you haven't read the Bitcoin Standard, the Fiat Standard, and something on economics, and I cannot remember the name of that third book, but you can find it all on Amazon. Safedean he's an absolute beast when it comes to being on the front and saying what needs to be said and not giving two fucks about this ridiculous puppet government that we have. I wanted to digress because I think I got a little off topic when I was talking about where I was going earlier with the whole thing and Iran and Israel.
Oh, and Yemen.
Yeah.
You wanna go over that real quick? I gotta take a bathroom break. Real quick, just pause.
So, I'll fill you back in when you get back. The terrifying thing to me when it comes to the amount of influence that these guys have had in our government and governments around the world is there's this thing called the Samson option. If you don't know the Samson option is if there is no hope for Israel and they're being attacked from all sides and it looks like it's going to be the end for them, they're just going to take out everybody through an absolute nuclear holocaust. To me, that could be worked in a few different ways. First of all, a lot of people don't know that Israel has its own nuclear arsenal. The American State Department won't talk about it. And while we're at it, I mean, might as well play this while Mike's in the bathroom. Let me grab this and add it to the screen. And I'm going to have you guys. So this is the State Department and a brave journalist who is in the audience is asking the question about the Israelis acquiring nuclear weapons and what our position is on it. It's just a very straightforward question, but have a listen for yourself and we'll talk about it.
That's where we're going to go. And in the back, did I hear JFK? Because interestingly, we haven't brought that up yet. So let's give that a try here. Who is JFK? So who keeps saying JFK?
Excellent. Thank you.
In the back? All right, let's do it.
The JFK assassination is obviously back in the news, and Jefferson Morley of JFK Facts was on Bill O'Reilly's show analyzing some of the documents that the Trump administration has released. One of the revelations that he discussed was the fact that James Angleton, the CIA counterintelligence chief, had relied on Israelis as part of his intelligence gathering operations, which included monitoring Oswald prior to the assassination.
It's indisputable that he kept him under surveillance for 4 years from 1959 to 1960. New documents point to an Israeli connection using Israeli agent to monitor Oswald.
As you may be aware, JFK in the summer of 1963 was deeply concerned with Israel acquiring nuclear weapons. He had sent a series of letters to Ben-Gurion, Israel's founding prime minister, demanding that Israel allow inspectors. Ben-Gurion resigned just when he was pressed on the issue by JFK.
Something I can say
to
this.
Yeah, I do. You want me to say something? I got a question for you. Right. Israel continued stalling the inspections, and JFK was, of course, assassinated in November. Every president since has adopted Israel's policy of refusing to acknowledge the existence of Israel's nuclear arsenal. My question to you is, will this administration finally do so?
Boy, we went from JFK and then to now Israel.
Will you acknowledge Israel has
nuclear weapons? No, I understand. Here's what I will tell you about the JFK files. About 80,000 pages of unredacted records related to the Kennedy assassination are currently being released, and I think they've finished at this point, by order of President Trump. We know that also, as I'd been asked before, if there was any other material anywhere, this is it. This is all the material. It's out. And again, unredacted. And so that's good news. For my generation, this is also good news. Certainly, as you grow up with that kind of a dynamic that happened in this country. And now, of course, we happily can say that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is contributing to the nature of our nation and making a difference as well. As far as the speculation and conspiracy theories about what was happening regarding that assassination and in the decades that followed, I have no comment for you, and nor am I going to speculate or comment
on it. So you will not
acknowledge
that Israel has nuclear weapons.
I appreciate you being here and asking me at the end. Nope, yes, sir. Nope.
Nothing. Yeah. Like, it's a straightforward question. Ian Carroll actually did a great video on this. The fact that our stance on Israel's nuclear weapons is we don't ask questions about Israel's nuclear weapons when everybody else in the world is under scrutiny, like Iran. It's like, dude, what the hell? Where I was going with this in terms of, you know, this playing out, like, There's a couple things that I think are playing out. I think there's two possible giant power moves in the world right now, right? There's a chance that the United States, China, and Russia understand the stakes that are on the table right now in terms of a collapsing, you know, US dollar and basically world economy. If that happens, and they're not prepared for the day after tomorrow, right? Then a lot of people starve to death. A lot of people go to war, a lot of death, a lot of casualties and things like that. And it's just chaos. If we see the attack, you know, a joint attack against Israel at some point in the very near future, I think this is coming. I think this is probably unavoidable at some point here in the very near future. If we see a joint attack that happens where all of a sudden they come out and they're like, look, this is what was going down behind the scenes. This is who we're allied with. These are the U.S. operations that are happening in theater right now. Then maybe, you know, this, I don't know, New World Order or whatever they want to call it. Maybe that's what wins the new paradigm. Now, there's the other side of this, which is built, I think, mostly in Hollywood by people that control special effects. They control technology. And that would be the Israelis. And so there's this giant push through psychological operations right now across both X and Instagram in terms of UAP, UFO, and all this kind of stuff. And where has that been pushed in the past? Like, we had the chief economic advisor to Barack Obama talking about how they would stage a alien invasion back in 2009 to spur the economy, to bring the world together to fight off aliens.
Project Blue Beam.
Yeah. So you've got these two different, I think, scenarios that are probably vying for the global power shift. And, you know, depending on how you see this playing out, if we get the invasion of aliens, I think that is definitely, you know, the Israelis. And if we get anything else other than going to war against them, right? Like, if we actually go in and start doing shit to Iran, I think it's toast. I think at that point we're literally in a hot World War III, and that's a mess, man. Because here's the thing is,
yeah,
if they have infiltrated every government, it probably means they have access to our nukes. It means they have access to other countries' nukes, which means they don't need nuclear weapons in Israel alone. They have nuclear weapons all around the planet. They don't need to send them to other countries. They can detonate them in the countries that they're in.
Yeah.
That's
well, and the scarier part too is if, I mean, we're already into this like rabbit hole of conspiracy theories, so we might as well just keep talking about
why not?
For those, like, if you guys haven't like come across like the parapsychology aspect of all this stuff, like the remote viewing activities by the CIA. I recommend you guys go on Amazon and watch Third Eye Spies. The CIA for decades, since the 70s at least, has been dumping millions and millions and millions of dollars into making sure that we have remote viewers, that these remote viewers are capable of looking through materials that are supposed to be, one of these remote viewers, his name was Ingo Swan. He was capable of being able to like telepathically see through shielding that is, the gateway process. Thanks, Humble. That's one of the initiatives that was pushed through the CIA for like being able to identify these parapsychologists, these remote viewers. But these people were capable of telepathically seeing through the kind of shielding that they use for figuring out like nuclear fusion.
Right.
Like, because you can't, like, if you're going to test that kind of that level of physics, you can't have electromagnetic waves of any kind manipulating the photons and the atoms in order to be able to identify that you can actually control this stuff. These guys were, this Ingo Swan guy was capable of seeing through that and being able to, he drew the designs of this contraption before he even physically was capable of being brought in to see it. And he was illegally brought in by Hal Puthoff, by his project, against Hal Puthoff's best interests, because he wanted to be able to prove that they could do this. Now, I say that because I mentioned how we've been piling millions of dollars into funding these projects or these programs to be able to develop and cultivate and attract and weaponize these individuals, these capabilities. The reason that we went so hard into it was because we found out that the Russians were doing it first, and that the Russians had more belief in it through all of their institutions of science and academia decades before we did. So Russia has been better at it than we have for much longer than we even thought it was real. So like, when you understand that, like these guys in, they mentioned in the Third Eye Spies documentary, they're like, so we realize that all of our protection mechanisms for keeping the nuclear football safe are meaningless if they have people of these capabilities. They can get the nuclear launch codes whenever they want. And that's outside of the hacking capabilities of these different superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
So then it gets to the point of like, okay, so we understand that nuclear war is basically a non-starter on multiple different fronts, because any of them can gain access to any of our nuclear weapons and launch them and control them. They could do it whenever they wanted to. Yeah. Search for the Ark of the Covenant's an interesting one.
That is a very interesting one as well, for sure.
Yeah. And if they know that these capabilities are out there and that these are part of the game theory that's going on, then it gives more credit, I think, to your theory of potentially they're trying to position themselves all to have very strong positions to either push back against Israel, or they are so heavily indoctrinated with their own stuff that we are just going to charge headlong into World War III, and they all think that they know better, right? Even though I'm the resident doom lord, I think that there's a greater likelihood that the majority of the parties that be at the top are communicating and understand that, like, they know. I would like to think that Putin and Xi in particular are communicating in a way where they're like, look, like, we know mutually assured destruction. We don't want that, because.
Yeah. And they haven't. And that's the thing is Putin could have taken out Ukraine long, long ago. Right. If there's anybody who's been extremely reserved, it's him. Now, go to communist China. Communist China hasn't attacked anybody. I don't think they've gone to war since it was like, I don't know, the late 60s or something. And it was just a very short skirmish. And they were like, hey, we're done with this kind of shit. They, for as terrible as China has been, the amount of economic growth, the amount of diplomacy, the amount of, you know, getting shit done inside their country and not squandering the resources on death and destruction outside of their own borders, at least, like, that, those are testaments to how much those guys don't want to be involved. Because if they wanted to be involved in war, they could have been involved in war. They got fronts all over the place, and they don't want it.
And they don't like any of their neighbors.
Right. So if you've got those two giant, very resource rich economic powerhouses that are like, hey, Israel, you need to knock that shit off. And you've got Trump, and let's take a look back at Trump in his first, like, you know, first 4 years. That guy created peace all over the place, and he stepped across, you know, lines in North Korea. Yeah. He tried to do as much as possible in terms of, you know, making trade a little more balanced between China and America, and really, you know, worked on peace relations there. I don't think you go away, awry from that. I think you have to be that person, that consistent person. I don't think you change when you're 78 years old like he is and say, okay, now's the okay time to start squandering, you know, our resources and blood in the Middle East again, which he's literally said, like, we should have never been there. We were there based on lies to begin with. It was such a boondoggle and a waste of our time and a waste of our resources and a waste of our young men. The fact that, you know, they're threatening the idea that we're going to be there again, it doesn't line up. It doesn't make a damn bit of sense to me. And I think it's more plausible that, yes, these guys have talked behind the scenes. There is something afoot, but I'm not that guy that's going to be like, well, it's also possible that, you know, these guys have in Israel have his number in the little black hats and something else is going on as well.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that Israel has influence inside Russia and China like they do in the US.
Yeah.
I guess it could be possible, but if they do have influence, I think it's going to be less direct than the influence here in the United States. Like, it's going to be through a number of relations. Yeah. Right, like it's going to be like a chain of telephone of trying to establish influence within them, because I mean, neither one of them, from my understanding, neither one of them really care for the Jewish faith to begin with.
Yeah, I imagine not. I know a lot of Pol Pot China was based on a lot of what was happening in terms of influence there, and that obviously sent that country back decades and decades, if not, you know, 100 years. And then you've got the Bolshevik Revolution, which was led by, you know, like almost 80% Jews in terms of leadership through Russia, that destroyed tens of millions of lives, 70 to 80 million, you know, and then obviously tens of millions more starved. So yeah, the love for the Israelis and Jews in those areas is probably not great. Here in the United States, the growing faction of people, especially, you know, veterans out here that are like, hey man, enough is enough. Like, we're not doing this anymore. We're not supporting this. I'm done paying taxes. And this idea that, you know, we're going to send more of our boys over there. Like, dude, no, like this kind of shit has got to stop.
I also can't help but think, and it looks like Tim might have run into like some scheduling difficulties or something like that, so I'm going to assume that he's not going to be joining us at this point. But, and we're on a great conversation anyway, so I don't really want to interrupt it. Yeah. But I'm also like, I can't also, because like the hard part, I mean, this is the hard part about intelligence and like superpower level geopolitics, is that you can't ignore like the intelligence strategy to it all. Like, yeah. I can't help but also hope that the public kind of like posturing around Yemen and Iran is also to see what, like, to take a temperature gauge on what the U.S. population's willingness for war is.
Yeah, it's zero.
Like, yeah, it, like, I mean, if you're gonna be positioning all this stuff, like, now we're getting, like, thanks to like what Pete Hegseth is doing, by the way, he just put out a memo, I think yesterday, stating that they were going to make the requirements for men and women for combat roles right the exact here, same. Like, that's a freaking win.
Let's wrap the doom and gloom up real quick and talk about Pete Hegseth for a second, because there are a couple things that we need to hit on.
Okay. Yeah. The thing I was going to say is that, like, with a lot of these things happening, like the fact that Pete Hegseth is turning the military around and we're seeing like the best recruiting numbers we've seen in a long time. And there's still not a desire, like, for, there's not a bloodthirst by the U.S. population. There's no interest to get involved in Iran and Yemen. I'm wondering if it isn't like a kind of like we're pushing our assets there to like signal to the population that this is a possibility, to draw out their reaction of like, no, we don't want this. Like, I want to start seeing like generals or admirals or colonels start speaking up, being like, yep, we don't need to be making this misstep. Because like, if you guys have dug into the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis enough, there was the, what is it? The Russian submarine captain is the reason, one of the reasons why like the actual Third World War didn't kick off during the Cold War, because he was given an order to launch a warhead against the US and he said no. Like, those are the people that we have to rely upon to not carry this stuff out and actually trigger this crap that the, like, these, whether they're Israelis or the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds, are trying to actually push the world into this level of chaos.
Right. I don't disagree with you. And I think here's the thing is, if you're out there and you're in the sound of our voice, you need to be those people. Get on X and give them hell. Absolute hell. Under no condition is there any war with Iran. Like, nobody from Iran tried to assassinate the president. I don't think that actually happened. And by the way, if you, I'm going to put this out there for anybody. If you're a gun bunny and you've shot targets that are on timers and they twist in cardboard, if you've shot enough rounds and you've seen one of those rounds catch a target sideways, that from a 5.56 is going to rip that target damn near in half. I mean, it's just going to go zip right through it. The fact that the president still has a fucking ear top just doesn't make any sense to me, because if you were to get a puncture in an ear, it would have to come at almost 90 degrees to the head. And what happened when that thing went whizzing by his ear the way it did, man, there's no way on earth that thing didn't take more ear with it. Like, it just,
what specifically took his ear, like what cut his ear, was actually the wake of the air being displaced from the round passing by him.
Possibly, it
was the
round. Or we're dealing with people who literally staged everything, covered him up, and put a little something in a packet to where he could grab it and then hold his ear. And, you know, now we've got at least the appearance of blood.
Yeah. I mean, I don't give a whole lot of credit to that theory, but it is possible.
It's very possible. Anyway, I just, I hope we're right, Mike. I hope that our wildest hopes are right. And there is something afoot where, as this whole damn thing collapses, you know, the good guys are starting to move that way. And let's talk about Pete Hegseth. Is Pete Hegseth a good guy? I don't know, but I sure as hell like,
he's not a saint. We'll say that.
No, and none of us are. But I will say, I do like this.
Hey, everybody. Pete Hegseth here. We're about to land in Washington, D.C. on our way back from Japan, where we've been meeting with the troops, talking to allies and partners, reestablishing deterrence in the Indo-Pacific. It's Sunday, but of course, we're still working. I want to show you one thing. It's a new memorandum that's coming out today on combat arms standards. You see, for far too long, we allowed standards to slip and different standards for men and women and combat arms MOSs and jobs. That's not acceptable. We need to have the same standard, male or female, in our combat roles to ensure our men and women who are under our leaders or in those formations have the best possible leaders and the highest possible standards that are not based at all on your sex, if you're a man or a woman. So we're signing this, I'm signing this memorandum today. The services will review, and soon we'll have nothing but the highest and equal standards for men and women in combat.
Not bad, Pete Hegseth. Not bad, man.
Like, now we need to start pushing that across all the MOSs.
That's what I said, man. I was like, I totally agree. Like, now this needs to be every MOS. And it's because here's the reason. You want equality? Great. Here's equality. Here's our mission. It's lethality. That's our mission. That's always been our mission. That will always be our mission. It's not the kinder, cuter, more cuddly, more homosexual, more transgender bullshit that we've been doing in the past. Sorry. No, we've got a real job to do here. And that means if things go down, we need badasses, right? We need the guys with fucking neck tattoos to knuckle tattoos. We need the guys that have been down range and done some shit and know, you know, anything and everything there is, the tips and tricks of the trade, to make sure that you and your guys come out on top. This is great. at minimum, you know, this is a win for the combat MOSs, where I think there has been too much bullshittery for way too long on the hopes and dreams of GI fucking Jane. Like, that was a fairy tale. That kind of stuff doesn't happen. Girls don't do 20 pull-ups. Girls don't run 15-minute 3 miles. They don't carry 120 pounds on their back for, you know, hours and hours and hours. And they definitely don't hang out with guys in those situations and don't get pregnant. Like,
yeah,
the like, it's all fairy tales.
There's a small few that could. And that's the whole point of keeping the standards equal. It's like the small few that can and that do, like, by all means, you guys have earned your right to be there.
is it railway guy? He says my daughter is an 11 Bravo and passes the men's A. I guess this is the Army PFT.
Yeah, Army physical fitness training, yes, would be the PFT.
And is a top Bradley gunner in her battalion. Man, that's very impressive.
She deserves to be there because she can do it.
Yeah, I will tell you, I don't want my daughter around grunts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
she can prove
that she can do the job, but like, I, dude, being in the military, like, I wouldn't want my daughter to be in any infantry or combat units that are co-ed.
So many reasons, but one of the major reasons is just the psychological side that she's going to carry with her for the rest of her life, man. And that's, he says, what he says, yeah, me neither. I get it.
We need Valkyrie units is what we need.
I 100% agree. If you want to be combat MOS as females there, yeah, the Valkyrie units, I think, are, you know, I know we have them in our, in the agencies and things like that, right? Like,
yeah,
they operate more on, you know, that side of things, but this is one of those things where I'm not a fan of women in combat. I, you know, call me old fashioned. It's not because I hate you guys. It's not. It's because I love you.
It's not your arena.
It's not your role. And I think that is one of the reasons why I don't need to go down that path. I think this is a big win. I hope they extend it to everybody else. I think it's ridiculous that there are different standards for promotions inside of the military.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is too, is that what also makes me excited is that it's going to recalibrate the basis for proper male action and male behavior to be able to use the military as a measuring stick.
Yep.
Right. Because like the soldiers are supposed to be the best parts of our country. They're supposed to be the men that will stand in the gap, the men that will come together in the worst of times to provide the best of service so that we can like pick up our neighbors and the civilians and the women and children and be able to protect them, reestablish security, and go on chugging along. But when your military is made up of a bunch of victimizers and
victims.
Victims and self and weak self-esteems and just fat and flabby and just generally weak, you can't like you can't provide that kind of support to your community and your country. And you like the men specifically and the young boys don't have the aspirations to live up to, right? Because that's like one of the things about being a man is that you are constantly chasing an ideal that you know is impossible. But because it's impossible to reach, it's like having Superman, like trying to be Superman. Like, you know, you can never get there. But the whole like motto, the whole male philosophy is like, I may not actually be able to get there, but there's no reason I can't continuously try to improve to get closer to that. Right. Yeah. That's what I'm excited for. Like the culture around America should start properly realigning over the next 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, there's a fantastic book out there. It's called Gates of Fire. It's about the guys at Thermopylae, back, you know, the Spartans at Thermopylae, way before this happened. One of my team leaders back in the day made me read it and memorize certain parts of it. And I believe, you know, at certain stages of history, there obviously were real warriors that were just and did things for the right reason. to protect their women, their children, their lands, their property and things like that against very unjust hordes of men out there. Right. Yeah. And when you hear the stories, to your point, Mike, is when you hear these stories of, you know, valor and, you know, perseverance and resilience and overcoming, you know, that is that valor and perseverance and everything that you hear as a young boy, like, you know, I don't know if it stirred, you know, I think there, especially in this audience, that stirred something in a lot of people. It's probably why you signed up for the military to begin with, right?
Is like, I want to act like that.
I want to be surrounded by that. I would, you know, if I needed to be that, maybe I could be that someday. Yeah. And I think every young boy at some point at least fantasizes about being the war hero.
Yeah. Right? And specifically fantasizing about getting the opportunity to prove it.
Exactly right. Now, I will tell you from a guy that's been downrange and has some decorations with V devices, like that is also a burden. Nobody talks about that side of things. If we're going to war and we have a just war, the people that are going to be called upon, the people that are going to stand and the people that are going to fight and die and watch their brothers bleed out and, you know, never come home, the ones that survive those things are going to be burdened with those thoughts and ideas and memories for the rest of their life.
Yeah. You guys put yourselves in a position to be sin eaters.
Yeah. And this is the difficult part that I think a lot of people don't talk about is like, can you live with yourself after doing things that are absolutely horrendous? Can you forgive? Can you forgive yourself? Can you move on? Can you live with, can you approach the different parts of your life, you know, from a young man that is single to a, you know, a guy who has a wife, to a guy that has children, to a, you know, an elder part of your society now in a good, healthy way. And I don't think that is, a common thing in our culture right now. You know, and I don't think we're set up as a culture to help guys transfer into that side of things. It's another thing that we try to do here at Bitcoin Veterans is help people understand that side of it, and push through that. But, you know, what is going to be asked of these guys, I think, in the very near future. And I think that's why you see Pete Hegseth making the rounds the way he is, man. This guy is asking, you know, a bunch of people at Annapolis, in the Army, at the Citadel, at, you know,
And scroll back up to that first video. Like, look at the kids that he's surrounded by.
They're kids.
They do not look like warriors at all. And like I'm not just saying that because like their age, but there's a difference in what our youngest soldiers look like and carry themselves now versus back during World War II. Like I'm sorry, but the soldiers in that video, they don't look like young men. They look like kids.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're mentally ready to handle those kinds of atrocities that they would be expected to be a part of.
No, it's all fun and games. I got to throw a football with Pete Hegseth. Let me follow this guy into battle. Right. And to Pete's credit, right? Like Pete was in the infantry. He was a military. He was an Army officer. He saw combat. He's got a combat badge. He doesn't have any V devices. He's got two bronze stars. I've done my research on Hegseth. He's got two bronze stars, which means he probably wrote himself up for two bronze stars on top of what he did.
So kind of gimmies.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Right. Like I'm not sure you deserve a bronze star for leading an infantry unit. Like that's okay. I don't know what the Army equivalent to a Navy Achievement Medal is, but I think that's more along the lines of where that belongs. Now, in terms of, you know, a combat badge, you know, a combat badge a long time ago could have meant, you know, when people were trying to get them, like you got shot at and you didn't return fire, or maybe it was just kind of harassment fire. It wasn't actually a direct engagement. So, you know, I don't know Pete Hegseth. He seems like he's going out and trying to get the approval and build trust and be this rock star of a DOD, you know, SecDef, but
yeah.
And in that, like, and on that side of it, he's doing it. He's getting all these guys. I think, ready for maybe the fight of their lives.
Well, and that the point that you're making is that we're going to find out what the real intention was in the next,
yes,
probably 2 years, because they're not going to do it in the last year of the presidency.
No, they're not. They're gonna print a bunch of money. Why Bitcoin is important. Save your funds, right? And yeah, at the same time, they're gonna use that on the war machine in one shape, way or another, because they don't know anything else. This is the most tired MO. We know the MO. We know what's gonna happen. And this is really trying to fix things before things get really crazy.
Yeah. So basically we have 18 months to find out like what the push is for fixing the recruiting problem and making all these rounds to kind of muster up the that's what he's doing, is he's mustering,
that's right,
the units by going around and getting them rallied up. I really hope it's not Iran, because like if you guys watching, if you haven't read Eomar's kind of like breakdown of Iran on his Substack, Eomar's one of our primary guys that's been joining us on Spaces and carrying the conversation.
Very good.
His breakdown of Iran is like, it's very impressive. Cause like specifically how he talks about the topography or the landscape, Iran's not a place where you want to have war at all.
Very mountainous.
Especially. Yeah. Very mountainous. And it's like
dry.
If you guys have studied war, you don't go to war against a mountainous people. Really, ever.
Ever. It doesn't work.
You leave them, you let them have their mountains. You don't like, you don't mess with them unless you absolutely have to.
That's why the Taliban is $20 billion richer in equipment and supplies and everything else after 20 plus years of the American forces being there, is because they kicked their
besides
ass.
Us feeding them $80 million, what is it, a week or a month?
Yeah, on top of it. Yeah, it's why the Fishtun culture has never been defeated. It's why it's where empires go to die, is what they say.
Yeah.
Iran will be a special place where somebody goes to die. Like, it is, vast desert mountains, man. That is unholy territory for an outsider. I'm going to tell you right now, like, that is the last place any American ever needs to go bleed a drop of blood.
Yeah. And like the unfortunate thing I was going to add to that too, is that like our military, we try to wrap it up as like, because of all of our technology, we can fight and win any and every war everywhere. It's like, not when it comes to mountains.
Nope.
We can't.
No. And that's the thing, is going to war over there would be like going to war in the Appalachian Mountains. Those guys they're armed to the teeth. And they know their land, and they know the ins and outs, and they've been there for thousands and thousands of years, man. Like, we don't have it in us. That's not what I wanted to see. This is what I wanted to see. Montani, scene eater is such a great concept. You should talk about that, Mike. Let's get it in. Maybe after this, we'll kind of wrap it up.
Yeah. All right. So there's a movie where I first got exposed to this, and I think it's called Sin Eaters, but I can't remember. If I'm not mistaken, I want to say Heath Ledger was in it, but I'm probably wrong because I've only seen it once in my life, but it had that vast of an impact. So a sin eater is effectively someone of I believe it was a Christian or a Catholic flavor, that decided that they were going to be the one that consumes and takes upon the sins of somebody who is on their deathbed, so that they can go on to heaven themselves.
Right.
And they're effectively, it's kind of like, it's pretty similar to Constantine. If you guys have seen the Keanu Reeves film, of where Keanu Reeves and Constantine is going through and sending demons back to hell for the sake of heaven. Sin eaters are going around and taking upon the sins of the individual so that they can embody all these sins and keep those sins under control and own them, so that other people can go upon, go through their death process and then ascend to heaven and be able to enjoy immortality in that next life without going to hell. And then the sin eater will basically, it's kind of like a parasite relationship, honestly, because the only way that a sin eater can actually progress to heaven himself is for another sin eater to take on his entire accumulation of sins. So there's a, so a sin eater takes on a massive risk by,
yeah, they being, die at a wrong time, unfortunately, without,
yeah, by yeah, by taking on the risk of not being able to progress to heaven himself, because if he were to die an untimely death or die in combat or something like that, that he knows that he could be going on to hell while he's allowing for everybody else to go on to heaven. And that's, in my opinion, that's effectively, that's like the proper male incarnate is right there. Like, we will take on the hells of reality so that our brothers, our women, our children can go on to heaven and experience paradise, even though we may not or likely will not be there ourselves.
Beautiful. Or just hear me out. You could eat some mushrooms. Forgive yourself. Don't do this. Don't do this. I don't say this tongue in cheek, and I don't say this for everybody. And obviously there are laws and everything else, but the sin eater thing is amazing. But being able to forgive yourself, if you're one of those guys out there that needs some help, that needs some mental work, I highly encourage you to explore this area. Do a lot of research. Maybe join BitcoinVeterans.org, and maybe some of our guys can kind of talk you through this kind of thing. Yeah. This is not medical advice. It's not psychological advice. This is from what I've learned and what I've been able to do in my own life with this kind of stuff. If you are one of those guys that's having trouble with that kind of stuff that we talked about in the program tonight, man, turn to people. You got a whole group out there. Life is not to be done alone, especially you guys out there. Get a battle buddy. You know, find somebody that can pick up your oar or paddle for you when times are tough, right? Like that. That's what we do in reconnaissance. It's what I think a lot of people do inside of the military. Just because you got out doesn't mean you still don't have a brotherhood. You don't have to be part of the VFW where you go and smoke and drink and tell, you know, ridiculous, you know, lies. I don't think that's the healthiest culture.
Yeah, I think consuming poison and reliving atrocities is not necessarily the way to do it.
No, you got to get to the point where you can look past it. You can forgive yourself and you can understand what happened to lead you to those points to begin with. With that being said, I think Mike, we'll start to wrap it up. It's been great. I mean, you know, Colonel, Tim Kirk, I hope you're okay out there, man. I know scheduling things happen and all that fun stuff. Maybe a later podcast. I was glad we had all this fuel anyway for the past 3 weeks to just burn. Mike and I can get on some rants pretty quick, but, let's tell you about, some of the things that are going on. I heard Wade Hoke went out to, Simply Bitcoin today and was on their show talking about Bitcoin Alaska. Bitcoin Alaska is the first Bitcoin Veterans Conference. You can go to bitcoinalaska.org. They've got a amazing thing going here. This whole site is set up for you to have a wonderful trip up there. They got everything from Tuesday, the first. It actually starts on the 3rd and runs through the 6th. But if you want to come in Tuesday, there are events scheduled around. There will be events scheduled after. This is, you know, obviously a large migration for a lot of people down there. There's tickets. There's, you know, the mountain pass, the whale pass. You've got a ton of great speakers. Lisa Huff is going to be there. Don Bay, Gabe Lord, our own, you know, founder of Operation Bitcoin. Alex Gladstein is going to be there. You've got the great Rustin, who will be there from Simply Bitcoin. You got Coleman, who is the lead on our daily show on Spaces at 10 a.m. Eastern on X. You got Joseph Kelly, Trevor Bellow. You got the great Scott Lindberg, Michelle Weekly, and Tali Lindberg. Man, power couple right there. They are incredible. Yeah. The makers of Hoddle Up and Free Market Kids. They're just incredible people. And then they've even got lodging figured out. One of those things that's, you know, obviously up there is a lack of lodging. If you're going, get... Yes, it's Juneau, I think, guys, right? Like, let me make sure.
I think so, yeah.
Juneau, yep. Alaska. now the 1st through the 6th, really the conference is the 3rd through the 6th. So if you want to get up there, you want to participate, we'd love to have you up there. We've got a bunch of people who are going to be showing up. I think this is a great start, and hats off to Wade for all he's done for not only making this conference, but for getting the video together of Bitcoin veterans in Nashville. If you haven't seen that, that is on the Bitcoin Veterans YouTube page. You can go check it out there, kind of see, you know, what we were able to do. And then our other partner, I got to talk to Nick from Fountain FM early this morning. If you don't know about Fountain FM, this is a great social media type of community podcast where you can actually trade value, whether you're a listener or a producer, and get paid in sats. You can communicate with other people, fans of the show. You can share it with other people. I mean, and obviously, like I said, you can trade sats in lightning fashion. They have so much going on. And I will tell you, and I don't know if I'm even supposed to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you guys right now, like, these guys are working on a hosting platform, and I am tickled to death. I got to see behind the scenes, like, what it's going to look like and how powerful it is for people who produce and, you know, put their podcast into the world. It is going to change the game. I'm stoked about it, man. I just absolutely going through it with Nick today. I was like, man, I can't wait to move this over. If you need a guinea pig, I'm your man. I've used multiple platforms in the past since 2018 doing this kind of stuff. But, you know, being able to support your creators, being able to discover new podcasts and talk to people about what the content you're, you know, listening to and earning rewards while you listen in sats, like, this is, people are going to look back at this and be like, man, you actually just could earn hundreds of sats by listening to podcasts. Like, that's an incredible thing to me. So go check out fountain.fm and maybe start listening there. It's a much better, more, you know, direct way to listen and provide value to the people that are actually creating content, and for us to interact with you even through Nostr, which is going to be a huge part of their platform, which I don't know, man. If you guys aren't on Nostr, get on Nostr. The Primal app is one I suggest. I don't
Primal know Primal does work a lot better than Domus does.
And I don't know what you guys over there on the Droid systems and the Google systems use.
I think it's Primal, isn't it? Or is it not Primal?
It might be. I don't know.
I thought it was Primal.
Yeah, a bunch of weirdos over there anyway. But any closing thoughts for tonight, Mike?
No, I thought that kind of ending things with talking about the Sin Eaters and stuff like that was a good way to wrap up the whole topic, because I guess the last thing I'll say is if you have somebody in your family like I do that's young and is a male and is like kind of excited about the prospect or the fantasy of joining the armed forces, do your best to try and talk them out of it, in my opinion, because
yeah,
you don't want them in the number of potential meat grinders that could be coming. Like, yeah, you just don't want them there. And bring, like, if their main driver is to get exposure to like the philosophy and the ethics and all that stuff, send them our way. We'll talk to them. Like, there's nothing better than being able to, as a young man, like, knowing, like, if I could have had access to like the Bitcoin veteran community as a young man, been able to go to these guys and talk with them and get a lot of this stuff like figured out and developed without going through the military industrial complex, that would have been a game changer. But I, like, there just wasn't stuff like that in existence at the time. So yeah, let us do the heavy lift if we can.
Yeah. Bitcoinveterans.org. Yeah. If you can send them our way, if we can help talk them out of the meat grinders and, you know, being pawns for these guys, we will happily do it. We've got a whole organization of, you know, meat eaters over here that absolutely would love the chance to help them and guide them along a different path. Bitcoin needs a lot of blue collar guys, especially in the mining sector. We need more and more blue collar guys. And I'm telling you right now, this is one of those projects, this parallel economy that we're building behind the scenes in a peaceful way. This is something that you can get behind that is everything that we were ever taught was American. This is liberty. Yeah. This is freedom. This is freedom of speech. This is the right to bear arms. This is the right to private property. And this is the right to freedom of association, which is maybe one of the most American things possible. So bitcoinveterans.org, we will plug you in the chat. So you don't have to be a veteran. You can be part of the civilian community that we've got over here as well, which plays a huge part in what we do. And we'll be glad to help you. If you're new to Bitcoin, we will help you understand Bitcoin. I know we don't get into, you know, the knickknacks of it. We don't talk about, you know, crazy number swings. We're not that kind of podcast. We are the podcast that understands what this means culturally to everybody on this planet and what it means economically to everybody on this planet over time. This is not get rich money quick. This is long haul. You will see your life change and then you will change lives. And that, I think, is what's important. So from all of us here at Bitcoin Veterans, thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you guys for sharing the show. Thank you guys for turning people onto this. I mean, we've got almost 500 people in the audience. We didn't even go at the right time tonight. Our guests didn't show up.
The last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, one last thing. If you guys are going to be at a BitBlock Boom, I'll be there for the 24 hours. I will be there Friday and Saturday. So if you guys want to link up with grab a coffee or something, I will be available to do so. I might be on a little bit of a tight schedule, so I might not be able to see everybody, but hit me up on Twitter or if you have my number and I'll link up with you.
And I believe Gabe will be there as well. So
perfect.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a great time. I'm going to miss it this year, unfortunately, but probably see you guys at the Mining Summit in Austin that the Bitcoin Park guys are putting on. Oh, and if you don't know, Bitcoin Park has expanded to Austin now, and that is a huge thing. You know, hats off to Odell and Rod, man. Those guys run a classy organization. The fact that they're expanding gives me a lot of hope. Yeah. And then, you know, there's also the Bitcoin magazine thing coming up in Vegas.
I won't be there.
I may have to be there. So maybe I'll see some of you guys in Vegas. And just remember, what goes on in Vegas gets broadcast over the internet everywhere. It's not secret anymore. So
nothing stays in Vegas.
We will see you guys possibly next week. May not be traveling anymore for a while, but we'll see. Until then, you guys be good. We'll see you over in the chats. Peace.